Moncrief on News Talk.
Grief is a funny thing. Years later, it can suddenly return and as vividly as when you first experienced it. Similarly, knowing that a parent will die is often little preparation for the reality of it. Deirdre O'Shaughnessy is opinion editor at the Irish Examiner and host of the Deirdre O'Shaughnessy podcast. Dee, good afternoon.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Not too bad. You were an only child.
Yeah, I was and am an only child. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's, you know, it's funny, I was thinking about this. I had remembered you had a show called Good Grief, Moncrief. You could actually make it a regular slot.
Yes. But because you were an only child, like your parents lived close to you, would you have seen them every day? Were you particularly close to you? They were a feature in your life.
No, I didn't see them every day, not at all, no. So I live in Cork and they lived in Limerick, so about an hour and a quarter away. But, I mean, I would have spoken to them every day or had some contact with them every day. And we were close, but not necessarily, you know, my mom would have probably rang me every day if I'd wanted to talk to her every day. But we, you know, we didn't have that real hand in glove relationship that some people do have. I think that would have been always an intention of my mother, because she was very conscious of me being an only child. She was one of nine herself, and I wasn't an only child by their choice. You know, they would have liked to have more children, so she was extremely conscious of not making me a stereotype of an only child, to the point that I was probably less spoiled than most of my classmates, because she was so aware of not turning me into that caricature. So she would have been very focused always on me kind of making friends and being close to my cousins, because I suppose she always knew that, you know, one day I would turn around and have no parents, you know. So in that respect, there's a thing called anticipatory grief, which I'm sure you've heard of, which is when you know, spend a lot of time waiting for someone to die and kind of expecting them to die and being sad about it a long time before they do die. And only children kind of get that from the culture to a point, because all children's books are about only children who end up orphaned. The very odd one, they have siblings. So, you know, Harry Potter has no siblings, obviously. Most of the Roald Dahl books are about a child whose parents are not there to protect them. You know, in Lemony Snicket, at least they have each other, the siblings.
Yeah.
So as an only child, you're very, very hyper aware that it really is just you and your, well, I certainly was, that it's just you and your parents. So my parents very much made an effort to make sure that, you know, it wouldn't be just me and them. And I suppose that's something that I have really appreciated with them gone, that they did build a family around me and friends around me, neighbours and cousins who have been really, really supportive with them gone, you know.
Yeah. So, but your father died first, and that was a surprise.
My mother died first.
Oh,
I think,
sorry.
I know where you got that, and yeah. Somebody else got that wrong. No, it was my mother died first, and that was quite a surprise. So she died in 2022. She had had multiple myeloma for a long time, and she had been having treatment for that. But as people who are familiar with that will know, you can only be treated for that a couple of times. And so she was due to have a second round of treatment for that. She'd initially been treated in 2016. So she, as I say, she was due to have that, but actually she got a chest infection, and it was the chest infection that killed her. So it, we thought it was, you know, we spent the last 2 years of her life frantically protecting her from COVID, largely against her own will, because she, I think she knew her time was limited, so she didn't want to be constrained. But she got a chest infection and a cough, and she was due to start chemo, her kind of second bout of chemo after having had it a few years previously. And I took her into the hospital one day for her chemo, and she never came home. Spent 3 weeks in the hospital and died, you know, in a way that was quite shocking for us, really. She went from the chemo room to the HDU to ICU to a ventilator and never woke up.
Oh my word. And and so you weren't there then, I assume.
I was lucky in that my job was working from home at the time. So I was able to go and stay with my dad for the couple of weeks while that she was in the hospital. Like, it became clear to us pretty quickly that it was very serious when she went to the HDU. And I suppose at the time we all knew about ventilators because of COVID. And of course, at the time I was news editor in the Examiner, so I knew all about ventilators. I knew more about ventilators than anybody that wasn't a doctor, I'd say. So when they were putting her on the ventilator, I think we all kind of knew, including her, that she probably wouldn't wake up. And, you know, there are a lot of difficulties around that in terms of how that whole process is handled and how the communication among medical teams is handled, because they were never clear enough about the fact that she would probably not wake up from it, you know. My dad, I suppose, because I knew a lot about the stats around ventilators and everything, I was fairly clear-eyed about it, but my dad wouldn't have been. And the communication was very poor, and also the handling of them turning off the ventilator was extremely poor. So, you know, they sort of created an artificial rush at the end, which didn't need to happen, which was done on a schedule because it was the Friday of a bank holiday weekend. And that part of it was really, really badly handled. And I think it did contribute a lot to the shock, I suppose, because it shouldn't, you know, if she had been on the ventilator for a couple of weeks, it shouldn't have been a shock when they turned it off, and yet it still was. You know, so I think that there's a long way to go in terms of how those things are handled by hospitals, you know.
Yeah, and in that moment, then when you know, when they have turned it off, and it's dawned on you both that it's happened, there's your own grief, but your dad is there with you as well, and you have to think about him, and you've the kids at home and all that kind of stuff. So, was there a process perhaps where you kind of put your own grief aside for a while?
Yeah, very much so, and I think we were kind of in shock because. You know, my dad had been very sick for a long time as well. And we all expected him to die first. You know, my mother had been making preparations for years for what she would do when he died, you know. She knew exactly, she had plans, you know. And he had been sick, very sick since 2019. And she was ready for that. We were all kind of ready for that because he'd been at death's door so many times. And I think the shock for him was that he was still alive and she wasn't. And nobody had planned for that at all. So that was really, really difficult for him. And I suppose then as well, because he was so ill, he needed a lot of, not a lot of care exactly. Like he could do all the things that a home help would do for you. So he wasn't entitled to that. But he also couldn't really live on his own and wasn't prepared to acknowledge that. So, and you know, I wasn't in a position to move in with him because I had small children. So it meant that his welfare was very much the priority, really, you know, even on the day of her funeral, you know, kind of wondering, would he be able for the day? You know, would he end up in hospital after the funeral, which he did a little bit after it? Was he going to be able for all of those things even? And he had a lot of medical needs around feeding and things. So it was quite difficult for him to manage that and for me and my husband to sort of manage him. So he became the focus really for the while after my mom, just trying to figure out how he would be able to manage with her gone, you know?
Yeah, and so the impact of your mother's death on you, did you experience it at first, or in that intervening period you just described there, were you more focused on looking after your dad?
Yeah, I think it was really a bit of both. I suppose because I didn't live with him and I wasn't able to live with him, you know, it was just this worry all the time. So I suppose the predominant feeling that I did have for a long time was just being worried about him. As I said, he'd been sick for so long that I was very much used to getting phone calls saying, oh, he's gone off in the ambulance. He's in the he's in resus in A&E because he's had a medical episode again. So I was really used to that. And the problem was, who was going to make the phone call? So the biggest difficulty was, who's going to keep an eye on him? So we had brilliant neighbours, and they literally would watch the curtains off his bedroom every morning for me and send me a text to say he was up. But you know, that's not sustainable, obviously. And luckily enough, I'm not superstitious and don't really believe in anything, but luckily enough, I think my mother sent somebody to look after him. We had a neighbour who was sort of in a kind of moving house and was looking for somewhere to stay and had his own medical needs, but was able to just be there and be company. So Anthony actually ended up moving in with my dad, and they were kind of like the odd couple. So for the last couple of years in my dad's life, actually, he had a lot of good times with Anthony, who moved in with him and was able to, you know, bring him the gossip from the pub and watch matches with him and that sort of stuff. So he kind of got a bonus there that we weren't expecting to get. But that happened after a couple of emergencies, one where my dad was on the floor all night because he hadn't been able to raise the alarm after he'd fallen. He'd ended up in ICU. We were on holidays. It was a very, very messy time, and it was very upsetting and very shocking. And I think it's really common, actually. I suppose the big difference for me is that this all happened to me maybe a little bit younger than it happens to most people. But, you know, I was 40 after both of them died, which was kind of a strange one. But I think for a lot of people, they experience this maybe in their 50s, where they have two elderly parents and they don't know which of them will go first and they can't look after each other. And that is very common. But for me, it was just that my parents were a bit younger and I was a bit younger. And there sort of is no system really for dealing with any of that. Some of the services are there in terms of, you know, some companies you'll ring and they'll be really brilliant about cancelling contracts or changing the name on bills or whatever. And then others are just, you know, absolutely useless, as if this has never happened before. But in terms of it's the community really that makes the difference and your friendships. And I suppose I'm very grateful, particularly to my mother, for being so aware that I would really need that network and for putting so much work into building it.
Yeah. So when did you realise, when did you notice an impact on you psychologically from your mother's passing away?
Well, immediately, I suppose, you know, that it's, you know, things have fundamentally changed so much. But I suppose when you're busy in your life, you know, you have I had two small kids at the time. We were finished. And then I decided a year after my mother died that we should have another one. Because like her, I do think that the more people you have around you, the better. So we have a third one since then. I went back to work after 2 weeks. My employer was very kind and very understanding, but I wanted to be back at work because what are you going to do? You know, what do you do all day? Just sit around and mope? I mean, that's not productive for anybody. So, you know, unless you have practical things to do. And I think that was much more the case when my dad died, where, you know, there was a house to be tidied and there were things like that, you know, official things to be done. Whereas after my mother died, it would have been just me and my dad sitting there looking at each other. So we kind of I kind of felt that I needed to get back to some kind of routine. And then when you have children, obviously, you don't have a choice about that. I mean, that's the one thing your researcher asked me what, you know, what would I suggest helped to other people? And well, having children. So they might be too late on that if they haven't already got them. But it does mean that you don't have time to really sit around and mope. And I think for me, if I hadn't had that push to get out of bed every morning, get them to school and do all that stuff, then I probably would have taken to the bed a bit, you know. I love a good cry, you know, and I've certainly done my crying on the school run, in the car, out for a walk. Everyone where I live has probably seen me crying at this point. But, you know, I mean, you notice it immediately, but you do find, I think, the biggest thing for me, I would compare it to an onion. I think, you know, our personality grows in layers like an onion. And I think where the grief is in one of those layers. So that layer is misshapen or the colour is different or whatever it is. And you will grow over it and you will grow new layers over it and your life will happen around it and over it. But the part of you that's grieving is always there. It's just that it might not be the bit that you see at any one time, you know. So I do think I've changed a lot. I think before, actually, I was a much more serious person. I think I'm less inclined to take things seriously now because I've seen, you know, the worst that can happen. And having said that, I suppose that's the one thing I'm very conscious of too, is a bit of perspective. And my job is very useful for that because you see the worst things do happen all the time to other people. And, you know, at my man's funeral, somebody, you know, said to me, God, it's tragic, you know. And I said, well, you know, it's very sad, but it's not tragic, actually. And they kind of looked at me and I said, you know, and at the time it was just as the Ukraine war was really starting to get very serious. And I said, well, she could have died of the same thing in a basement in Mariupol being bombed, and people probably are dying in that scenario now. So I said, you know, we live in a country where people are looked after and there's dignity and, you know, we have support and I have my friends. So, you know, it actually could be an awful lot worse. And I do think that perspective is a useful thing to have, even if it does sound a bit cold sometimes.
Yeah. Did you have to go for help, though, at any point?
I did, yeah, I did. And, you know, I wouldn't even put it as having to go for help. I think that's just a thing you should do, you know, if you have the option, of course, not everybody does. But I did find, for the first few months, I was very much in shock, I think. And you just find your resilience is shot. So you're exhausted all the time. I mean, really, really tired, like wading through concrete tired. So, you know, I remember going to get my bloods done because I thought there was something wrong with me. And the doctor just said, no, she just said you're grieving. So I had anti-anxiety medication for a little while just to sort of take the edge off, just for a short period. And it did. And then after 6 months, I went for counselling. And that was great. That was good help. Because, you know, there's only so many times you can discuss this with your friends and there's really only so many things you can say and people don't know what to say. And that's another thing I would say to people is if you have people in your circle who've already been through it, they're the people you talk to. Because other people, they really don't know what to say. And unless they've been through it, they don't get it. You know, with all the will in the world, it's only when you've been through it that you really do understand what it's like. And people are very good and very kind, but, you know, they get enough of it too. Everyone has their own stuff to be dealing with. So being able to talk to a professional who kind of isn't going to get sick of what you're on about is useful, you know?
Yeah. And so then when, and God, you went through not just your mother dying, but your father was a constant worry there. Though, as you say, you got some kind of a certain amount of relief. When your dad finally died, did that feel different? Obviously, it's a loss of a parent, but perhaps this was something, this was the death you had anticipated.
Yeah, it was totally different because I suppose he had been so sick for so long that I was kind of relieved for him. And that was very, very different. So I think for him, you know, he had been just really lost without my mum. He was kind of a follower by nature anyway. I mean, when we were talking about, you know, their wishes after they died, you know, she had wanted her ashes scattered in the sea because she loved the beach and she loved the sea and she loved the west of Ireland. And my dad said, sure, I'll go there too. I mean, he couldn't even swim. So I kind of said, I could picture her telling him to, you know, get his own idea, you know. But so no, when he died, I just think he had lived a lot longer than we expected him to live without her. He lived 2 years. He died just after her second anniversary, and he lived long enough to meet my youngest son. And we kind of told him that I was pregnant very early on in the pregnancy, just to kind of to see would it keep him going, and it did, you know. And it really did. Like he lived long enough to meet him, and he came to meet him, and that meant a lot to us. So in one sense, it was a very different experience. But you know, what you lose when you lose your second parent is the memory bank, you know. So that's difficult.
Yeah. And actually, it doesn't matter, I think, if you've got siblings or not. When you've lost both your parents, and you kind of think, I'm an orphan now. And now you can be a full grown adult. You can be in your 40s, 50s or 60s. It's still a kind of an odd sensation.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And like, obviously, I do have other relatives. I have, you know, aunts and uncles and cousins. But, you know, your cousins don't remember when you lost your first tooth or, you know, any of those things, or who lived in that house down the street in between this family and that family. And you know, why do you remember that positively or negatively, or, you know, those sort of things. So you do lose a lot of that. But that's, I suppose, the value in talking to them while they're there, you know. And and then equally, you know, it depends on how into you your parents are a bit as well, you know, into all that stuff. Like, did my dad remember when I lost my first tooth? I don't think so.
Yeah. You know? No, that's an ask your mother situation.
Big time. So I think you can imbue your parents with a lot of these sorts of saintly characteristics that, you know, sometimes they have them, but sometimes they don't. Like, very much so. Like, when my mother died, most of those things went through because my dad should remember to have that. But then things like family history and you know, the history of where we're from. Like, he was big into the local history of the town where I'm from Kilfinnan, and he would have been able to tell me anything about the place and those sort of things, you know. I really feel the lack of him for those kind of things as well, you know.
Yeah. And now, a few years down the line, but not that many, does it still feel raw to you, or over time does it diminish a bit?
Well, it's only a year and a half since my dad died, so yeah. It's very hard to say, you know. It comes to the surface sometimes. I suppose it is like that onion thing, you know. It's there, and something will trigger it every so often, and it might just be something really stupid or something really unexpected, or a song or an ad or a TV show or something, you know. But you do. I mean, it does get easier. Like, that's the one thing, and I suppose people will say sometimes, oh, it never gets easier. You always feel this pain. And, you know, it's up there, but you don't always feel it to the same degree. You know, it comes and goes. You couldn't, because you couldn't live like that, you know.
No.
And I suppose you do have a responsibility to them a bit as well, to get on with things. Like, my mother was a great woman for getting on with things. She'd be disgusted if she thought I wasn't getting on with things.
Yes. You know? That's true. That's it. You can still hear their, you can, even if they're gone, you can still hear their, you can still hear them giving out to you as well at the same time. Deirdre, thanks a million for talking to us today. That was Deirdre O'Shaughnessy there, opinion editor at the Irish Examiner and host of the Deirdre O'Shaughnessy podcast.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.